Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. In this 8th episode of my tracking series, I had the awesome fortune to catch up with avid hunter, tracker, and cyber tracker evaluator, Brian McConnell. In our discussion, we cover a lot of ground, pun intended. Brian fills us in on his background as a young man, being taught by his dad how to hunt in the Arkansas woods, and then learning intuitively how to trail deer, and finally, later in life, connecting with a class offering formal training and tracking techniques, which helped him refine his craft to the point of earning a specialist level on his second ever trailing evaluation, and then of course becoming an evaluator shortly after that. Brian then goes on to share his knowledge on how a trailing evaluation unfolds and what the evaluator is scoring the tracker on, how he uses tracking to inform and support his hunting activities, especially when hunting deer and elk, and then he regales us with some hunting stories, showcasing how he's able to track right to elk and harvest an animal with a bow at about a 90% success rate. Brian then lastly gives us some practical tips on how to begin learning the art of trailing, especially when hunting. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Wallin. This podcast is an exploration of the ways that people can reconnect to the natural world through bushcraft, naturalist skills, and time spent immersed in the nature they find around and within them. We also discuss how this reconnection can increase our individual well-being and that of our communities and the earth. Thank you for joining me. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Tracking Series. I am really, really excited to bring this particular discussion to you. I have to admit, this discussion actually took place quite a while ago, almost a year ago, I think in May of last year, 2020, shortly after the whole world came crashing down with COVID and all. And it's just one of those ones I've been really, really anticipating releasing and enjoying that anticipation. But just with things that have gotten in the way and other stuff going on, it just took a while to get it out. But it's a really awesome discussion with Brian. I didn't know Brian before reaching out to him for this, and but I definitely heard about him from some other trackers and friends that I had communicated with, and they basically told me, hey, man, you really need to connect with Brian McConnell. He's literally like the best trailer in North America, and he's very humble about it, of course, but yeah, just had a really awesome discussion on hunting and trailing and cyber tracker evaluations and all that, so I'm really excited to bring that to you. So I hope you really enjoy this episode and get a lot out of it. And with that, I will give you a little introduction on Brian here. So Brian is an avid hunter and outdoorsman, a member of the Washington State Master Hunter Program, and a passionate naturalist. Brian enjoys mentoring new hunters and watching people working their first bear trail. Brian became a senior tracker under the Cyber Tracker system in 2008 and has been an evaluator for Cyber Tracker specializing in trailing since 2009. He currently conducts trailing evaluations, trainings, and workshops around his home in Washington State and throughout North America, and has contributed stories for the book Practical Tracking and photos for the book Wildlife of the Pacific Northwest. So without further delay, here is Brian.
Tell us about how you became interested in the natural world. Like, what was kind of your, you know, the genesis, and then kind of your, the arc of you getting into nature stuff, so to speak?
Oh, gosh. I guess I'd have to go way back. It really is born straight out of hunting, I think. I mean, probably the genesis would be the Arkansas squirrel season. Right? That's like what every kid does down there.
Yeah, for me, it was the Iowa squirrel season. Yeah. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, squirrel season. That's just like October. October 1st, Saturday, October, you know, that's when it opened up, and that's when I could go hunting. And I think I remember, I think I was six for my sixth birthday. I got a little 410 pump shotgun my dad went and bought, and I went with him, and We stopped at my grandpa's house. We were driving by and we stopped at my grandpa's house on the way home from picking up the shotgun, and they ran the butt of it across the table saw and lopped off, you know, 4 inches off of it so I can get it up. Cause I'm, you know, a 6 year old.
Yeah. And that's how they made a youth model back then. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, I started squirrel hunting. I think maybe you should leave this part out, but like, I remember getting home like that day with my dad, and, there were some robins out in the hayfield across the driveway, and he's like, "There you go, son, shoot one." So I remember shooting this robin when I was six. I have a really vivid memory of it. Like, it's the only robin I've ever shot, by the way.
But, right.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
That's a visceral thing for a six-year-old for sure.
Yeah. That kind of set it off. But yeah, that fall, my dad at that point in his life and my life with my dad, he was just, that's what he did. He went squirrel hunting and duck hunting. And also that fall of when I was six, my grandpa, my mom's dad, I called him my papa. He was a member of a hunting club that where they went deer hunting. And so I started going to the deer camp with him when I was six and hunted with him and just had some really cool experiences sitting on the ground with my grandpa, you know, having deer walk up to us. And I remember that. I can see it right now talking to you. I can see these two little deer walking up to us. But yeah, so I hunted with my dad squirrel hunting and with my grandpa deer hunting, till I was probably about 9 or 10. And by then I had a younger brother who was 4 years younger than me. So by the time I was 10, he was 6, and it was like, okay, son, you've learned enough now, you go. So Saturday mornings in the fall would be me getting dropped off and my dad saying, okay, be back here at 10 o'clock. That was it. And so, cause he had to take my little brother then.
Right.
I was on my own. So about the time when I was 10, I was hunting by myself at that point, deer hunting and squirrel hunting. And just, yeah, that was all I thought about, you know. We had a small farm, a little 75-acre farm where we like had hay fields, and my dad raised cattle, and we had a few horses. And later on when I was a teenager, I had some pigs and stuff, but mostly it was just for, we ran cattle on it. And but that was surrounded by woods on basically the whole thing. To the north, that was a good mile of solid mixed hardwood, just really beautiful woods. And I just, you know, I'd run up there as a kid and hang out in the woods and walk around looking for places to hunt. And as I started to get a little older, you know, like 8, 9, really starting to pay more attention to stuff, like my grandpa, my papa that I told you about, sawing off my shotgun and going deer hunting. He cruised timber for a living. So he was in the woods every day out marking trees, and he had a stack of deer sheds in the chicken coop that was like 4 foot high mountain of deer sheds. But no, he knew the woods, and he grew up in a time when they're like, I think he told me he was maybe 8 years old when he even saw his first deer. So it was yeah. And now you can, you know, there's almost in Arkansas, I think there's probably more white-tailed deer than there are people. And so that's a whole different podcast. But, no, he really knew. I mean, he was in the woods every day, and he knew a lot about trees and plants and tracks. And he started, I remember him showing me with his thumb in the dust in the driveway, like what a coyote track looks like. And I don't remember how old I was, but I remember him showing me that and how to tell it apart from fox and dogs. And you know, of course I knew what a deer track looked like. I mean, what 8 year old doesn't know what a deer track looks like?
Right.
But, yeah, him just giving, schooling me on, you know, wow, this is coyote, not a dog. And yeah. And he was just a quiet, wealth of information when it came to learning, you know, where deer went, where to look for squirrels or whatever. But yeah, I just had so many cool experiences hunting and looking for places to hunt and hunting and looking for places to hunt. And it just, I never grew out of that. I'm still stuck in that, you know.
That's a good place to be stuck, if you ask me.
Yeah. So that's kind of the genesis of it, was just like a birth through hunting for me.
Right.
Just definitely piqued my interest. I had so many cool experiences in the woods squirrel hunting that it's just what I wanted to do. Yeah.
I can totally echo that. I mean, I remember the first time my dad let me go off by myself with my little break single 410 and, you know, I was like, okay, go do what you're going to do, you know, go hunting.
Yeah.
And I'll come get you this time. And, you know, as a young 9-10 year old, that you just feel like you were just completely liberated, you know, that you could go off in the woods and just, you know, do whatever you want and be trusted with a firearm. And it's just, it's a really amazing thing as a young kid to have that kind of experience. So I can definitely relate. So how did this love for the natural world and hunting and all that, when did tracking come in to all this, and how did that
about? Well, I guess like probably the first time I shot a deer, I was 11 and I was hunting with a double barrel 20 gauge and I shot it with slugs and I think I shot it in the leg, but I thought I'd hit it and killed it, of course, but I didn't. It was crippled. And so I spent hours by myself trying to find this deer, and finally went back to the house and got my dad. And my dad came and helped me look for it. And we were basically at that point looking for it. But for hours that morning, I spent on my hands and knees, like seriously trying to follow this deer trail. And I was going systematically track for track and finding a little piece of blood and a little piece of hair. And I did that. And that was like a real wake up call for me. Like, oh yeah, this is what I need to be doing here. I'm doing the right thing, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I remember like growing from there. I had a whole different appreciation for tracks. Like the end of the story is, some people that have property next door ended up like killing that deer that afternoon with their dogs. But I spent the whole day trying to find it and following this trail and really not going anywhere. I maybe went 100 yards.
Right.
But I felt like I'd followed this deer all day. And yeah, that was a hard lesson. And after that, I don't know if I took it serious or it just felt like this is what I needed to learn, but I just started paying more attention to tracks and where they were going at that point. The whole cyber tracker thing, that's much later in life, but I don't really know how I grew from that other than I just started paying attention and following deer tracks. And, the more blood trails and deer trails I followed, the more I realized, oh, I don't need blood. I can just follow their tracks too. And, I just did it. I just went out and did it. I got on these deer trails and said, I wonder where that goes. I'm going to follow it and see where it goes. You know, is it going to take me to a white oak tree or, you know, is it going to take me to a crossing or where's this trail going to come out?
Yeah. And so when you started in this way, it sounds to me like it was pretty much all just kind of, it was an intuitive thing for you to just start doing and just kind of figure out as you went. Like you didn't really have any formal training or like, this is what this gate is. This is what this,
no, not know, at all.
That kind of stuff means. And interesting.
No, I didn't get the gate thing described to me until later in books and trying to figure it out on my own. And
but up until that point, as you were looking at trails and kind of self-learning, did you get to a point where you kind of felt like you got a feel for, okay, this animal's moving faster, this animal's moving slower,
speeding,
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, this one's running.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's either going really fast or it's walking. Yeah. That was my understanding of gaits at, you know, the age 14 or something, but yeah. Right. No, the whole figuring out the gait and the technical, I mean, like the technical knowledge,
right?
Like what you would use to like share your information beyond, you know, fast or slow, the whole scientific part of it. Yeah. That was much later. Yeah.
So when you say much later, you know, how long had you been tracking in this way before you came to that point where you started finding and being exposed to information about the more scientific side, so to speak?
Oh gosh, probably in my 30s.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I 2007, I took a tracking class with Wilderness Awareness School. And because I wanted to meet trackers, I wanted to meet real trackers, and right. I wanted to learn tracking. And that was great, though. I learned about, you know, rodents.
Yeah, who would have thought you'd ever want to track rodents?
I knew what mice tracks look like, but, you know, I never really thought to look. How many toes do they have on their front feet?
Right.
Then I really got exposed to this whole culture and, you know, the really deep science behind understanding tracking and the track and sign part of it. You know, that was missing for me for sure. Getting out and following a deer trail I could do, but I didn't know, you know, I didn't know how to tell. Oh gosh. Well, what do you think? Yeah. The little stuff.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I can imagine though that when you did come to that, I mean, you had years and years and tons of dirt time with practical tracking skills. I can imagine that you just kind of took to it real quick and easy. With that.
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. 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 It kind of felt like a class where I already knew all the material.
Right.
This is just fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah. But it solved a lot of mysteries for me too. I was like, and there was stuff I thought I knew that I was like, no, that's, you're wrong, Brian. It's actually this.
So what was one of the, you know, one or two of like the big aha things, like when you got around trackers and started piecing together, you know, kind of that side of things, what was it for you that was like,
just even simple stuff like, you know, coyote poop versus raccoon poop, but you know, where it's going to be on, you know, I knew when I was a kid, I knew like raccoon latrines at the bottom of trees, you know, because I was climbing trees all the time and stuff. And it was really nasty to get raccoon shit on you when you slid down a tree or, but things like that. Yeah. Just, you know, how to tell apart, you know, coyote poop from cat, you know, feline and things like that. And just
nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. So tell us about, you know, your work as a trailing evaluator for the Cyber Tracker system. How did that come about?
Well, that wouldn't have come about if I wouldn't have taken that class, the tracking intensive at Wilderness Awareness School. There was a couple of things about that year that one of the guest instructors was Mark Elbrock, and I'd recently got his book and was like, this guy sounds pretty cool. I'd like to meet him. And part of the curriculum that year that I went down there and did that class, it was at the end of the year, Mark was going to be there as a guest instructor, and they were going to have an evaluation, a track and sign evaluation. So, I was excited about that as part of the class. And, cause I was like, I wanted to meet Mark. And, so I thought this would be a cool way to do it. It sounded interesting. Plus there were other cool, I think Sue Morris was a guest instructor, and John Young came out for one of the days. And, so it was great to meet, those people. But, at the end of the intensive, they had an evaluation and I got to meet Mark, and just by chance. And the instructors at that for that year were Jason Knight and Dave Moskowitz. And just by chance, and they had recognized that, hey, Brian's pretty good at following animal stuff. So, and Mark was going to do a trailing evaluation for the instructors, for the WAS instructors. And one of them happened to be sick. And so they had an extra space, and, they said, hey, Mark, how about you let Brian do that? And, Mark said, no, no way. And I said, yeah, I'd do it. And Mark said, no, sorry, no way. It's just for the instructors. And they're like, well, you really should maybe let him go do it. And so he kind of said, okay, he can come. And if there's time, he can do the evaluation. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going, and we went over into Eastern Washington, and we went into, I think we went to Oak Creek. And yeah, sure enough, there was time to let me do a trail, and I guess I did pretty good. And so,
you need to validate that a little bit. I want to know what you mean by you did pretty good, because I would imagine if you're with instructors and Mark Elbrock says you did pretty good, you probably knocked the ball out of the park.
I followed the trail and we caught up with the elk and we snuck in and watched.
And this is your first eval ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
So that's it was a group. We started out in the morning and Dave went first, and he actually ended up walking into the bottom of a canyon below where these elk were bedded. And by then the thermals had switched and they smelled us and they spooked, poof. And that was probably around 20 elk. And then they switched, and Jason tried to figure out their trails, where to go, and did that for a few hours. And then just towards the end of the day, and Mark just put me on one of them, and I picked out where one of them went, and we walked it. And it was a couple of cows that had, when they left, they just exploded. And I went back and picked a different trail from what Jason had been trying to follow. And we followed them side hill across the rim of this canyon, and they went down, got on a trail, went across a couple of rocky draws, went onto another finger, and it kind of slowed down and milled, and I could see where they had stopped and browsed a little bit, kind of hung out. And I said, boy, I bet they're bedded close. And so I just had everybody wait, and I eased down to where I could see in another place, and I could see one of them's ear going like that. And it was close. It was maybe 30 yards from us. So I eased back up and got Mark and brought him down there and showed him. And yeah, so it was, I mean, it was a good trail. It was fresh. It was nice weather. I had the wind in my favor. So a lot of things went right, you know, which have to do to catch up with them. But
of course. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the world smiled on me that day. And, but no, yeah, everybody got to sneak in and look at it. It was a good afternoon breeze coming up in our face, and we were above where these two elk were bedded. I think it was two cows, and they both had, there might've been a yearling with them. This would have been, when was that? I'm trying to remember if they had one of them had a calf already or not. I think it was late May. I don't think they had calved yet. So it might've been, it was a couple of cows, and it seemed like maybe a yearling too. So,
right,
like a year old at least, maybe might have been four of them. It's embarrassing, I don't remember.
But, that was a while ago.
Yeah, so yeah, that was, so Mark was impressed, and he said, you know, you ought to come down to California next month, I'm going to do another one of these. So I went down and I did another one. That was, or not next month, it was in the fall. Yeah, so it would have been September or October.
And so what's the story with that one? What were you trailing at that time?
So that was when Adrian Lowe was out.
Okay,
from South Africa. He came from South Africa and was helping Mark do some of the evaluations. And I think he came out for that ISPT conference also. But Mark was really pushing to get he was traveling around with George Leoniak, and they were doing a bunch of evaluations and trying to get it going, get it rolling in North America. And so that fall, Audrin came out, and I met them down in California at Kuyama. So and did an evaluation there, and we ended up, that's where I ended up getting a senior level trailing.
Wow.
So yeah, my second evaluation.
That's amazing.
A trailing specialist. But that was, that was on a nice bear trail. Yeah, they, he invited me down and said, you know, I want you to think about doing this. And gosh, they, what was it? It was kind of a similar deal. Like, there was a couple of guys, three or four guys that were there taking the evaluation, and they just kind of had me go, and we'll put you in if there's something for you to follow. Right.
Right.
Well, the first something for me to follow was this baked, dry mountain lion track that was like crusted into the ground. And I looked at him, I was like, you want me to follow that? I think maybe been here a month.
And right.
He said, just do what you can do. And I was like, okay. So I started working it for about 20 minutes and maybe went, I don't know, 20 yards and then hit a wash. And I was just walking down this wash and I was like, it's probably here in this wash, but it's just windblown. It's gone.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, maybe we should find you something else. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
Dear Lord. Because they were walking around for 30 minutes looking for it, and they're like, yeah, we should find something reasonable. But the next day, ended up getting on a bear trail and followed it for probably, I don't know, it was a fresh trail. One of the guys started following, and it hit a road, and some car traffic had been over it. It was from that morning. It's quite fresh. It's pretty good sized bear, and it worked, and it hit this road, and he lost it, and we looked for it and couldn't quite find it, and went and got onto an older trail, and they had me start following this older, really small yearling bear, and I followed it for a couple hundred yards and ended up hitting the trail of the bear that we'd been following from that morning. And so I said, this one. And so we switched back onto that bear, and I followed it for, I don't know, several miles around down through there. It was feeding on acorn, basically going from oak tree to oak tree, just hoovering up that or acorns there. And it was a great trail. It was like, to this day, one of the most fun bear trails I've ever been on, just because it
was awesome.
It felt so easy compared to, I live in Northwest Washington, and to have like bear tracks and substrate where you can see the track,
right?
And toes. And I was like, this is awesome. Let's go.
It's not just a depression and some broken vegetation.
Yeah. It's not just a little kidney bean shaped shadow of in the leaves, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that was, that felt good. And at the end of the day, they set me down and they said, you know, you should be teaching this. And would you like to be an evaluator? And I was like, what's that?
Right.
So like we made plans right there. I made plans with Audrin to start training to be an evaluator, and traveled around with him for the next year, basically year and a half, doing his
like dozens
of trailing evaluations with him. And I learned a lot doing it, and got to see a lot of cool stuff. And it was awesome. You know, and like the adage goes, the best way to learn something is teach. Well, it made me push my limits of what I could do. And, I tested myself. It's where I really started to get into like trusting the intuition of my theories, you know, like instead of relying so much on the systematic step-by-step hard work and the speculating on like, I think it's over there. You start, when you're watching people do it, you have time to think about, it was a lot like going back to hunting. Because then I was hunting for where the trail went after these people lost it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's kind of how I got started into the being an evaluator. Yeah.
So take us through real quick. Yeah, it sounds like it. But, you know, they saw your potential and what you had already achieved, you know, as a tracker long before that, sounds like. So that's really cool. So tell us real quick, kind of take us through an evaluation. Like, what is it that the evaluator is looking for in a tracker as they're trailing and all that? What, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, so you... you've done a track and sign, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So you're familiar with the track and sign portion of this right. tracker evaluation system and the trailing portion, which is mostly, that's my area of focus. I've kind of devoted my time to that. Just like what I like to do, but also I don't have time for outside my life. I want to go hunting.
right. Can't cut into that.
I want to have time to go hunting. But no, so the trailing portion, if I take you out, Ron, and I say, okay, you know, find me a deer trail or find a deer trail or oftentimes even we just, you know, we'll go out and we'll make a group effort out of it with the group, you know, it's typically done in groups of maximum of four people and over a 2-day period and dog come to visit.
All right. We like special guests.
So what we'll do is we'll go out and we'll find a fresh trail and it might be, you know, for higher level trackers, people that are looking for a specialist level, we tend to give them more latitude to find your own trail because we want to see how you go about that. But typical evaluation, you know, let's just go out and do a standard level evaluation. It would be, all right, Ron, this looks like a fresh trail. What do you think? And I might get your thoughts on that. And then I say, all right, man, get after it. and it's really that simple.
Right.
And it's beautiful how simple it is. It's also so complicated, infinitely complicated. But what I'm looking at is I'm watching just how you go about all the aspects of it. You know, how do you recognize tracks? Do you recognize the tracks in hard substrate? Do you recognize them when they're easy to see? What are you seeing there? And then how well do you anticipate, you know, where to look for tracks? Are you walking along a game path, but everywhere there's a trail? Are you paying attention to that or are you ignoring that? You know, meaning a travel route where, say, you're on a deer trail and there's a faint little path that cuts off to the right or cuts off downhill. You know, are you leaving the most likely travel route to now go look down there? Or are you off in incredibly hard substrate when there's a little patch of, you know, sand or open terrain or something that might readily show tracks? Or so there's that anticipation aspect of it. How, you know, how are you looking? How are you going about looking? Not just how you see the tracks, how are you seeing, but how are you going about looking them? What's your method for doing that? And then there's, you know, you get into those are the technical aspects of it. And then you get into like the woodsmanship part of it. Like, you know, how quiet are you? Are you paying attention to the wind direction? Are you aware of, you know, animal behavior, you know, that the deer might be resting during the midday or, you know, if you're following bears, are they out moving in the afternoon? You know, a lot of times undisturbed bears, they'll be out 2 in the afternoon kicking around, doing their thing, you know?
Right.
You know, and just understanding the animal behavior aspect of it. But then there's the whole component of not just looking at you and how you're managing the situation, how you're seeing the tracks, but there's also what does a track look like where you see it or don't see it? What does the trail look like where you lost it? And that's a natural part of it. And that's something a lot of people I see. They expect someone, you know, you said, talk about myself, someone like
Please.
Me,
yeah,
someone like me, who's got a, you know, 30 years of trailing experience. I lose the trail all the time. what's the trail look like where I lose it? What's the trail look like where you lose it? Is it, did you lose it because the animal just made a little turn and you didn't see it? Or did you lose it because the substrate's incredibly difficult? And there's no logical place to sort out where it's going to. And then you have to shift gears from that systematic or speculative part into that intuitive part. Like, man, I really think that guy went up and got on that ridge line up there. I'm gonna, if I have any chance of salvaging this trail, I need to go up there and look for it. Sometimes you go up there and there's nothing. Sometimes you go up there and there's a game trail with the right track on it. And, you know, that's part of it. Losing that trail, it's a natural part of it. So we look at how you go about finding it and what does it look like where you find it? Did you find it in an incredibly hard place to find, or did you find it in an easy place? And so we're not just evaluating you. I'm also looking at the trail and what the trail conditions are like, and kind of rating the trail at the same time as watching the person that's on point working the trail and evaluating it. And if you do a good job and you know what you're doing and you move quietly and it's a fresh trail, man, 2 or 3 hours, you'll catch up to that deer and I'll turn around, or you'll turn around and I'll go, good job, let's go.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's fun. And when you get someone to do that, you know, especially like workshops or something where, you know, it might be the first time someone's walked a bear trail and they follow a bear trail for 2 or 3 hours, and maybe you help them, maybe you don't. And that's just really rewarding. But to like answer your question, like that's what I'm looking for in an evaluation. And, it's a lot, you know, that's those five little aspects of, they cover a lot of ground.
It's
an infinite realm of stuff to consider. And you know,
that's cool, that's awesome.
I got my helper back.
All right,
what are you doing?
We like helpers, special guests, all that kind of stuff. Cool. So let's get into more of the hunting aspect of things. How can tracking enrich and inform a hunt? Like, what are some ways that it does that?
Well, I use it to figure out where I'm going to go, really. And I think that's what I was doing as a kid that I still do. Let me be careful how I say this.
Take your time.
Some animals I use it for, you know, hunting more than others. I pretty much like just deer hunt and elk hunt and turkey hunt. And that's about it. Right. You know, at the moment. Sometimes I'll go on a cool trip or something, but like practically speaking day to day for deer, I use tracking extensively to find areas to hunt. Like I'll pay attention to game trails. What does it look like on the terrain? Where, you know, what do these tracks look like in the morning here? That, you know, is this a good area to still hunt for? And I've found over the years trying to like incorporate, for the past 20 years or so, following trails. I do a lot of bow hunting off the ground, still hunting. And with like trying to get close to deer with a bow, close enough to shoot a deer with a bow, and by following their trails, really hard.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's one thing to, you know, walk into where you can see them. But it's a whole nother ball game to get, you know, to within 25 or 30 yards of one. And it's super hard to not scare them and do that. So I do a lot of spot and stalk for deer. But I also do a lot of still hunting. But I set myself up to do that still hunting based on tracking, like where are beds? You know, I'll follow deer trails in the summertime or fall till I find where they're bedding. And then I'll start looking at the terrain around there and figuring out where the travel routes going in and out of those bedding areas are, and figure out okay, if they're bedded on this ridge, where's a good place for me to set up and still hunt, you know, after they're going to get up and move out or before they move up to that bed. So I kind of like try to put myself in position to intercept them. But sometimes I do like get a wild hare and just go, I'm just going to follow this one, see if I can get close enough. And every once in a while it works. That's for deer. For elk though, most of the elk I've shot with a bow, I've trailed their trail to them.
Wow.
Yeah. It just feels a little easier to get within bow range of elk than it does deer. And, so I'll do that. Like,
why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think just because they're typically in herds, you know, they might be traveling with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 15 other animals, and they get used to noises and they get used to hearing little noises. And so you can get away with a little bit more noise. And, they're a little bit more predictable about, I think, about where they're going to, actually not a little bit. I think they're a lot more predictable about where they're going to bed. And, I can recognize bedding areas. And, you know, that, and also too, because they make more noise, I get a little clue often when I'm getting to within 40 or 50 yards and I maybe haven't seen them yet. I might, if I'm playing the wind good, I might smell them or hear them, you know, making a little bit of racket. And I know I get a little bit of early warning, like I'm close, I need to switch gears. And, so I make less mistakes, I think, with elk than with deer. And, yeah, it's just, it just feels a little bit easier to get within bow range of an elk than, you know, like if I have a deer season go by where I, you know, follow a deer trail in on a deer within bow range and even have a chance to draw my bow, I feel like I've done pretty good. But, you know, a typical week of elk hunting, I might get within bow range of them daily, you know.
Wow. And that's from tracking to them, like you said.
And that's from tracking to them. Yeah. 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 It's usually
phenomenal.
Almost every day I'll catch up to them. And, you know, it might not be right. I might not be able to get close enough without spooking them, or the wind's wrong, or I scare them, or I do get close enough, but there's just too much brush to shoot an arrow through. And so, that's, yeah, it'll feel easier. Like, I can tell you a quick story.
Please do. We love stories. From
last fall's elks. last fall's elk season. They shifted the season in Washington to where the area I go, the last 5 days are either set or, yeah, it's cow or spike only. It's kind of hard to get a bull tag for some of the quality areas, and I'm not interested in horns that much, so I'm, you know, happy to go shoot a cow. So
right.
The last 5 days of early archery season are I can shoot a cow in this unit I've been hunting in for a number of years. And I ran a race the weekend. It opened on Saturday, no, Sunday. Anyway, I was only gonna be able to go 4 of the last 5 days, because I'd ran a race the day before and was kind of recovering from that. And
when you say ran, you mean you actually ran, like you're a runner. Ran there,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was 100 miler. And so I was a little trashed.
100 mile race.
Just tired. Yeah. So I was a little tired.
Wow.
And I had time to think about it. Well, so the next morning, like the morning I could start hunting, I got done on Sunday. Sunday late morning with the race, and drove down to kind of where I want to hunt and just crashed, ate a bunch of food and crashed, and just said, I'm just going to get up when I wake up. And I woke up and it was daylight, and I said, all right, man, it's time to go elk hunting. So
nice.
I ate a big breakfast, and I said, you know, before I go into the woods, I'm going to check this place where I know the elk have been crossing this gravel road out of this feeding area. I see them cross there every once in a while. I said, it'll be worth checking. If there's a fresh trail there, I'll just follow them. So I drove by there in my pickup truck, and sure enough, like there was some elk tracks going in the woods. And so I just parked at my camping spot and set up camp, and then just grabbed my bow, my pack, and went in there and probably got started on the trail at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And by about 1, maybe a little sooner, 12:30, I was within 40 yards of these elk.
Wow.
But I just knew, like, the wind was not right just to go over a little finger ridge. I knew they were on the other side of this ridge. I could hear them. But the wind was not right. I knew if I tried to go over there the way I'm going. So I said, I need to get out of here right now. So I just backed out and went side sloped away from them and took another nap.
They weren't going nowhere.
Took another nap for about an hour. And then I just said, well, I might go explore down here a little bit. And went and explored, found another trail, followed it for an hour or so, and then said, yeah, this doesn't look good. And I said, oh, it's time to go back. So I went back to where I knew the elk were bedded about an hour and a half before dark, and just got back into almost the exact same spot just in time for the wind to switch. Mm. And when the wind switched, I waited, and I heard a little bugle squeal down in there, and a couple of cows started talking, and pretty soon, here they come. And I was able to shoot the first cow that came up. I was trying to sneak in on it. It's legal for spike too. I was trying to sneak in on this spike and I was like, I'm not going to do it. He just froze in the wrong spot. And, you know, then by then the cows, he was kind of staying away from the group. But, you know, that was like a quick story about how easy it felt just to sneak in on them. But also at the same time, like, I didn't rush things. I didn't push in there. I was like, I'm going to come back. And if they have left there and gone somewhere else in the evening, the wind will be good for me to follow them down. Mm.
And how many was in this group?
Probably about a dozen cows and a pretty nice bull.
So I would imagine, and this is more of a question than a statement, I guess, but it sounds like, or it seems to me as if tracking a whole bunch of animals trailing it would be easier than just the single one.
For sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. A few years ago, I got drawn for the quality bull tag in that unit. And, I've seen some really nice bulls, and I thought I found one, man. He had just like this massive track, and I was pretty sure it was the same bull I'd seen the year before. It was just like, I had him about 15 yards from me, just bugling right there.
Oh, man.
Several different days, but it was not legal to shoot him. So all I could do was just watch as he was like in between me and these cows bugling. And, but the next year I got drawn for a tag. And so I thought it was the same bull, but it could have been something else, but it had a huge track. So for like, I think I hunted 8 straight days. I followed this bull. I just followed this bull around and around and around and around, had shots at cows, just like ignored them. Just like watched them stare at me, and I would just kind of slink back and then leave them and then go around and trying to catch up to this bull. And I never got within bow range of him. Yeah.
The reason he got that big, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah. So, but yeah. And that was challenging because he would slip off on his own a lot of time during the day. Hmm. And just harass these cows at night. And there was not a lot of competition, I don't think, from other bulls in there. And they weren't rutting really hard. They were kind of scattered out. So he didn't have a big herd he was pushing around. Anyway, that was a little more challenging. But, yeah, you're exactly right. When you got, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 elk that you're following, it's a lot easier to look up, right? The African trackers talk about, that's their big thing. They're telling you, you know, you need to have your head up. You need to look around. You need to see what's going on. So when the trail is easy, like following a dozen elk that just walked through there 4 hours ago.
Right, but, just trampled everything.
You know, it can be really tricky too. You get into some of those hard surface hillsides and, you know, dug for understory on really hard ground. And man, you can feel really dumb. Like there were just 12 elk walking through here. Now I can't see a single track.
That's the humbling part.
That's the humbling part. Yep. But you know where they're going.
Right.
And so if you just keep on walking and yep, there's another track. So that freedom of when the trail's easy allows you to lift your head up and look around so that you can see that ear twitch or you can see that little bit of horn moving around in the tree branches up ahead. That, you know, you're not stuck on looking at a track because the track is just a track, but you're not following the track. You're following where the animal went. And right. If you're hunting them, you want to find the animal. You don't give a damn about the tracks.
Right.
The track
just what
is
they can tell you.
The track is just a tool to get me where I want to go, which is right. To where this deer is bedded or where this elk is. And yeah. So yeah, you're exactly right. It's easy. And that's, you know, take advantage of those easy stretches to like look around like, okay, yeah, now I can pay attention to other stuff. My awareness is not zoned in on this little bit of information right in front of me. I got this whole story. I can have my head up and read what's going on.
Right.
So yeah, that definitely ties into the easy part. And you'll see that
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you'll see, I was just going to add, just like, you'll see that. I see that as an evaluator, you know, you'll see that like the harder a trail gets or the harder substrate gets, people's head just gets sucked and their focus just goes down to their feet. And so you have to remind people like, don't be looking at your feet. Even when it's hard, remember to keep your head up and look up as much as you can because you'll never see that, you know, animal butt running away from you.
Right. Yeah. Might miss it while you're looking at their dang track.
Yeah, exactly.
There it went.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've literally watched a person, I'm not going to name any names, but I watched a person, we were following a bear. We were actually up where close to where I go elk hunting. We were following, I was with a couple other people. We were doing a little bit of research stuff. And we were with this person. And I got on a fresh bear trail and we kind of said, all right, yeah, let's follow this bear. So we're following this bear. And we caught up. There was a sow and she had a cub with her. And she must have, I think she got wind of us. I'm not entirely sure if she heard us or got wind of us. But she sent her cub up a tree and was woofing at us in a really marshy, boggy thicket. But right as we get to this point, we come up to where probably a mountain lion had killed a porcupine. Mm-hmm. And so there's like porcupine bones and it could have just died too, but it had been chewed on. The rose of this porcupine had been chewed on. Anyway, looked like a cat had killed it. So right as we get to where these porcupine bones are, this bear goes shooting up a tree and you can hear this cub going, ah, ah. And it's maybe 75 yards from us. And you can hear also underneath this cub, this bear huffing at us.
Right.
And I'm like, look right there. You can see it. And this person's got us back to the bear going, you really think this is a porcupine? And I said, yeah, there's a bear right behind you. So, you know, it could be a person's preference too. Like, what's your motivation? Do you care about the animal that you're looking for? Or are you really interested in the tracks?
Well, that's a real thing because, I mean, you mentioned the African trackers and, you know, the little bit of information I've been gathering within the tracking world. You know, North American trackers are less interested in finding the animal as a rule, you know, it seems like typically we're really interested in the tracks a lot of times.
Yeah.
And African trackers are very practical. Like the track is, you know, it's great and it has information, but we're really going after the animal. And it's neat to see how the evaluator, the cyber tracker evaluations have really kind of brought these two worlds together. And you see the fusion that's going on there. So that's kind of fun. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Some people are really, really into the track and they want to know what and where and why, and that's all great. And that there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're trying to find an animal, then there is something wrong with that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The hobbyist is, yeah, definitely different motivation than the person out, you know, looking to fill a deer tag or an elk tag or, right. Yeah. Yeah, or like you mentioned, yeah, tying it into the cyber tracker where those guys are, they're over there following stuff that has, you know, big teeth, big claws. Right.
Yeah.
And if
yeah,
you've got your head danger. Down, if you got your head down and you walk into, you know, you can walk into trouble really quickly. And
absolutely.
Yeah. If you, you know, around here too, if you get, you know, seriously into following trails, first time you have a moose like running at you, snorting. Or bear wolfing at you too.
I'll make you look up real quick.
Yeah. You're walking along quietly with your head down. You might run into trouble. Yeah. So it's fun when people get reminded of that, which is right. Usually just me getting reminded of that. But yeah.
So, you know, you talked about, you know, a lot of your elk kills were elk that you tracked right too. So like percentage wise, what would you say? How many of your, you know, your, the elk that you've taken were elk that you were able to track right too?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. With a bow?
Yeah. With like a bow.
90% probably.
Wow.
Yeah. I've tried a few with, you know, on rifle hunts, but with a bow, almost all of them, I think. I can't. Yeah, I would say most of them, by and far, most of them I've trailed into.
That's amazing. Yeah. And
yeah,
that, it's really fascinating to me because if you, it seems to me that if I was to get a group of elk hunters together and say, hey, check out this method of hunting elk where you can get one, you know, by walking right to it. And if you ask this group of elk hunters whether they've ever done that before, I mean, almost all of them would say no. You know, it's not really, to my knowledge, to my understanding, it's not a thing among elk hunters to be able to track right to them to kill them, you know. Maybe get some information. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of tracks here. It looks like feeding signs. So they're probably around this area. Maybe I'll hang around here. You know, things like that. And of course, once an animal is down, trying to find it. Once you've shot it, you know, but it seems to me that most elk hunters don't, for the most part, probably don't consider tracking until they've actually hit an animal and need to find it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think by and large, you're correct. Yeah. I think there are a small number of guys out there that just quietly go about their thing and kind of do what I do. I mean, I know there are. I've read, you know, read a lot of articles where people mention it and, you know, that they're following their tracks into this bedding area looking for elk or looking for this elk, you know?
Yeah.
So I, you know, I have read articles about it, but yeah, I think it's, those guys are pretty quiet about it. And, you know, elk too, like so many people are out there in the fall, just blowing bugles and cow calls and trying to call them that, and, you know, that there's an art to that and it's fun doing that, getting a response and getting a bull to come to you. And, but yeah, I mean, I don't do that.
Right.
I would like to, I mean, I've gone, you know, taking trips to Colorado and stuff and tried calling in bulls and I guess I'm not the greatest elk bugler.
Well, you don't have to be, you can follow them. No.
Yeah.
So if you,
I've had a few chances, but gosh, it was just always that limb in the way. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. So, I mean, if you had an elk hunter that came to you and was like, you know, I want you to tell me why I should start learning how to track, like, what's that going to do for me as a hunter? You know, cause you know, I've never had a problem finding an elk after I've shot it. What's the big deal? You know? So what, you know, if you were trying to convince an elk hunter or a deer hunter, any hunter for that matter, the importance of tracking and why that's a skill that they should really start paying attention to, what would you tell them?
I would probably just say it's going to open your eyes up to a story that you're not necessarily getting the full picture of. Mm. Yeah. You know, it, yeah, you don't need it to go sit in one place and wait for an animal to walk by.
Right.
But man, it makes it a lot easier. It really
and
does.
More fun.
And more fun. But yeah, there's so much going on that you just won't miss if you're not paying attention, or you won't see if you are not paying attention to those tracks, you know, and to those trails and where they take you. And it's this, you know, I told you that story about the elk. I've been going to this place for a number of years now, just hunting in this place. And it's really interesting to see how the trails form, where the elk are going, and they do different things from year to year. They're pretty reliable about, you know, some areas, and then some years they're just off doing something different.
Interesting.
But they're pretty consistently in the spot though. So it's not like, you know, I have to go completely leave that drainage to go find them. It's just, you know, they might be using a different part of this river bottom, you know, and it's a river drainage with, you know, mountains. I just kind of stick to one side of the mountains.
Mm.
But yeah, nice. That's the main thing I would tell people is just like, there's a story there.
Right.
You know, you learn to see those hard tracks and stuff, and you start going, oh, look at that mountain lion track.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I didn't notice these fresh bear tracks here last year. So you start seeing things like that. You're like, what else you're sharing the woods with?
Mm.
And yeah, it's pretty cool to see just how many elk, not right now, son, how many elk I'm out following, where there's also a cat following them too.
Wow. Yeah. So there's a story.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I've seen a lot of mountain lions elk hunting. we're looking for the same thing. And
right.
Yeah. It's been pretty interesting.
That's yeah. Cool. Well, just a few more questions. I know you got a kid that wants your attention.
Yeah.
You're fine. So how would someone who is an avid hunter, but, you know, knows nothing about tracking and wants to start learning and be able to kind of maybe get to the point where they can trail an elk right to it or start trailing deer or whatever, what would you recommend to them to start doing? Where do they begin that journey of learning this art and skill?
You have to go do it. There's no easy way about it. Yeah. I think was it Casey McFarland asked me that right after I first met him. And I think I told him I was kind of joking, but I was also one of those where I'm serious jokes. I said, mm-hmm. You just go out and follow a deer 200 times. And he said, oh, and I think he did that. But
Casey would do that.
I think, I honestly think he went out and followed, he had a little book and he said, all right, mule deer number 173. And so, no, I think he did. I think he did follow 200 deer. And it shows. But you have to do it. There's no shortcut. I mean, because there's a physical skill of seeing the tracks, right?
Mm-hmm.
But me and you, if we look at the ground out in my yard here, we're both going to see the same thing. It's just right. How you process and interpret that information. And that's where the skill has room to grow. So mm-hmm. Beyond seeing the track, there's no more skill beyond that.
Right.
You know, the physical skill is we both see this shadow right here.
Right.
But then how do you interpret that? And that's where the practice comes in. But that said, there is, you know, you do have to train your eye to see shadows and,
right.
You know, little refractions of light that are different. And oh my gosh, the aging part of it. That's a whole nother lifetime.
Yep.
Lifetimes factors go into that.
Right.
But, if I would tell someone that's learning, just practice, Just go out and, you know, start out with having like, you know, your kid, your 7 year old over here, go walk around through the, if you have some, you know, natural substrate around your house or close by. Yeah, you have done that. Yes. And then go out and follow their trail. Yeah. If you live in an area where there's deer, obviously go out and do systematic tracking where you try to find every track on a trail and just do that routinely, weekly. And then, you know, don't worry about going fast. Just get your eye trained to see tracks. Just go systematically, track for track. And then as time goes by, start raising your head up a little bit. Start looking at where those tracks are going, where those deer tracks that you've been following for the past month. You know, I've been going back to the same place every month and these deer go here. Now, where are they going? Where's that deer choosing to go? Is it walking straight up to this bush? Why? Why is it choosing to go straight up through the bush? Right. The chance it's probably just going to take a little browse there and then turn and go back around. Mm. And then, you know, factoring in the aging, like I said, that's another story. But one thing I'll tell people too, if you're interested in following deer, if you have a place where you can just go set and watch deer, just go set and watch them. Because if you've watched deer, they don't walk from point A to point B in a straight line. In fact, they don't walk from point A to point B in a single day.
Right.
They go like in a circle, in a zigzag, and they stop and they turn around and they loop back on themselves. And when you watch deer and their behavior and how they're choosing to move around, you know, even if it's just in a park or in the suburbs or something where you can watch what deer are doing and how they're moving around. You get an appreciation for just how much they're moving and placing their feet on the substrate that you're not seeing when you're out following their trail. Mm. You know, you may think, well, yeah, the deer, you got to travel out in mind and the deer are going this way and you're going to track here and up there, there's another track. And then up there, there's, you know, 10 more feet. Oh, I found another track and I'm pretty sure it's the same deer. But when you can start to see all those tracks in between that you're able to do because you've built up this, you know, library of search images that allow you to pick out all these different tracks, what they look like in leaf litter, what do all these tracks look like in baked ground, what do they look like in short grass, what do they look like in, you know, herbaceous succulents that are coming up in the spring. What do they look like in wet leaves? What do they look like in dry leaves? What do they look like in, you know, cedar duff? What do they look like in fir needles? What do they look like in pine straw? What are they? Yeah. This goes on and on and on. And so you have these search images in this catalog. You can go, it walked up here and then it turned right here. And so you kind of get this, you get that back to that story. You have that story going. And so that story starts to link together and all these gaps that you're seeing between easy tracks suddenly start to fill in with where you're seeing the hard tracks and they tie together and you have a continuity that just gives you a bunch of confidence and you're like, yeah, I'm still on it. And you keep moving.
Right. And
that comes from the hard work of practicing in your backyard, looking at your kids' tracks and where your 7 year old should be walking around out in the woods. When I was like working towards being an evaluator, I think this was before this guy, but we have an older one who's out on his own.
He just went on a run.
I would do that with him. Yeah. I would track him around through the woods. And sometimes I would tell my wife, Sonia, like, hey, go walk around through the woods today and don't tell me where you went. And when I get home, I'm going to follow your trail and see what you did.
Nice.
And so I would do that occasionally with her. And one day she did that and I came home and I just walked around the edge of our yard and it's woods past our yard for miles and miles. And I picked up her tracks where she like stepped off in the woods and I was pretty confident. I was like, oh yeah. And I followed him around and they made a big arc kind of around our property. And then we have a little stream, and she crossed the stream and she came back on the bridge and then went back in the woods. And I was really happy I found that term, and I got back in the house. It took me like maybe 15 minutes to walk maybe 200 yards of her trail. And I saw like every track, and I was like so pleased with myself. And I came in and she was fixing dinner, and she said, "Did you see what I left you?"
Oh, no. Good for her.
I said, I just kind of put my head down and turned around and walked out the door. And like halfway, I forget, gosh, about head high, it was about eye level for me, hanging on a tree limb over her trail was a, she had hung a little leather bag with something in it. I don't remember what was in it. And then I just picked it up, went back in the house, and I said,
she taught you a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mr. Big Shot feeling all good about himself. And, but yeah, that really is no substitute for practicing. I mean, sometimes I feel rusty and I have to, like that first day of elk season, man, I'm like, oh, maybe I should have been out in the woods more. But, you know, life happens and you get busy.
Right.
Right. And some days for me, if I run up the hill and find a fresh bear trail, I might just follow it for 10 minutes. Mm. And that feels like I've done something good. And, you know,
right.
It doesn't take a lot. If you can fit in an hour here, you know, or an hour there, or you don't have to go follow a trail for 7 miles for 12 hours across the mountain.
Right.
Get in some serious practice.
Just kick off the cobwebs a bit, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, it's, you know, I'm lucky I got a place where I can do that, but a lot of times I just have to fit in when I can fit in.
Right.
And just go follow a deer or go follow a bear. Yesterday I was all excited. I thought I found a bear, but it was a mountain lion. So I said, oh, darn.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, what are two or more books that you might recommend to our listeners on just maybe hunting and tracking or trailing or whatever?
I thought of this question yesterday.
Yep.
And like the first one that came to my mind is Dersu the Trapper.
Ooh.
It's an old, yeah, both of these are old, both the ones I like wanted to recommend. I thought of books that were like really influential to me when I was younger and stuff, but yeah, Dersu the Trapper, it's V.K. Arseniev wrote it. I think it's from the late 1800s, around the turn of the century there, early 1900s. It's in Siberia, and Dersu is indigenous gold, I think is the name of the tribe or their ethnicity. I think they call themselves gold. Anyway, Dersu, it's pretty awesome. Dersu's a god that's hired by this Russian military captain who's in charge of like mapping out railway lines for the for the Soviet government at the time. And so he hires him as a god. It's factual accounts. It's not really glorified or anything. And but Dersu is just like somebody that was born hunting.
Wow.
And he uses tracking to hunt and to live, you know, for everything. All his resources are, you know, tracking is a tool for how he gathers his resources and keeps track of where they're going. And it's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. I've never heard that one.
Yeah, Dersu,
those little,
man.
Those little hidden gems that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Very good.
I always think about that whenever somebody asks me about a book. I'm like, well, there's so many, you know. but I like Dersu. And he just, yeah, he's really simple in his thoughts. Yeah. And, but he was a true hunter, man. Yeah. Always worried about tigers.
Oh.
Which made me think of the other book I would like recommend. It's kind of dated, but it's Jim Corbett Omnibus.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever read Jim Corbett or not.
I have. Yeah. I love Jim Corbett.
I love Jim Corbett. It's a little dated in his, you know.
Right.
But talk about tracking and hunting.
Oh, yeah.
with consequences. Yeah, and a great storyteller, yeah. And naturalist too.
Absolutely.
You know, later in his life he did amazing work to protect the areas and the, you know, animals in them. And, yeah, they're both just like how nonchalantly he describes like being out at night tracking man-eating
birds.
It's just, but yeah, in the omnibus, he really goes into like his childhood, and you know, he was out there as a kid, like learning.
Yeah, listening. being taught by the people that lived in the bush.
Yep. And I was just like, man, that's awesome. To go track some tigers.
No kidding, leopards and
yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Cool. Those are great suggestions. Thank you. And how can people further connect with you and your work and what you're doing and all that?
Probably just through the tracker certification website. My email is on there.
Okay.
You can learn a little bit about CyberTracker through that portal, and it'll get you to cybertracker.org too if you want to delve deeper into the CyberTracker world. But yeah, tracker certification or wildlife tracking in North America, that'll get you there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would recommend as one recommendation for listeners who are hunters and want to get into trailing and stuff, go on a trailing evaluation.
Yeah.
It's a great way to learn how to trail. You know, it's like perfect practice makes perfect. And if you want to learn how to trail well, go learn how to trail well and then go out and practice using those techniques and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Okay. We got to get you on one.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely want to come on one. Hopefully next month. I'm working on it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm afraid with the current state of the world, the ones I had for May are going to get canceled, including Rob's. I'm not sure. That's on the fence right now. I was going to do one here in Washington next month, but it does not look good access wise.
Yeah, because they're closing stuff down too, aren't they?
Yeah, the woods state land is off limits, and Forest Services. Yeah, and Washington, you know, stay at home order and the whole thing.
That's a shame.
So,
yeah, I've been holding off on a plane ticket, so it's probably a good thing I continue to hold off for a little while.
Yeah. And I'm supposed to go to England in June, and I don't know if that's going to happen. So there's a lot of uncertainty. But yes, we have to get you on one. And, hit Casey up there in the Southwest or
something. I need to do that.
Or do you live in Arizona? Is that where you live? I do.
Yep. Yeah, I'm in the Phoenix area.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good substrate.
I know. I love it. That nice
thing called sand.
I love it.
If you can see out this window, you'll see it's green.
Right.
No dirt.
Well, that's what threw me off. I did my first and only track and sign eval a couple of years ago, and I did it as part of my master's program that I'm doing, and I did it with Dave up in Mount Hood, and I was pretty intimidated because I've never been in the Pacific Northwest ever, and so I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do here, and you know, I was hoping for a better score, but it was definitely a fair score, and I did a little better than I thought I would, so that was good.
Awesome. So, yeah, good for you.
Yeah. So that was amazing. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, I was pretty worried about not knowing the ecosystem and a different substrate, but I was still amazed at how transferable it all is.
Yes. Really, that's fantastic. The beauty about trailing is if you recognize, you know, whitetail deer tracks in sand, Arizona, you're going to recognize, you know, an antelope track in South Africa, it's going to look the same, right? Or for me here, when I go to England, it's, you know, fallow deer or black-tailed deer, they look the same. It's leaf litter, or, you know, it's, anywhere I go, that's a cool thing about trailing. It's so transferable. Yeah. If it's a similar type of substrate, it's going to be, if it's a hoofed animal, it looks the same. If it's a soft-footed animal, it looks the same. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Pretty awesome. You can take it and use it.
Yeah.
It's a good tool.
Yeah. I'm excited to get into trailing more. It's not something that I've really, really gotten into. So I've done it, of course, but I want to do it more. So I'm excited to get on an eval sometime. So
yeah,
we'll see if that works out or not. But cool. Well, thanks so much, Brian. Really appreciate you coming on and picking your brain and all that kind of stuff. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. That was fun.
Well, friends, I hope you learned a lot and were as inspired by Brian as I was to get out and hit the trails and see what animals you can find. So, hope you really enjoyed that. Definitely go check out Brian on the Cyber Tracker website. It's trackercertification.com. I put the link in my show notes, of course, as well as the links to the book recommendations and any other information you might want to get a hold of from this episode. As always, we always, always, always appreciate any reviews that you are willing to go and write for us, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can send me an email directly to ron@coyotespath.com. And of course, you can connect with the podcast and myself on Facebook and Instagram. So, until the next episode, happy trails.